Purdue's student and community newscast. Now, here's your host, Rita Farkas.
Good evening. Coming up on the program, Premier Gordon Campbell announces funding for homeless children, and a proposed casino in Newton spurs controversy. We'll have all this, plus arts, sports, and your weekend weather forecast coming up this half hour right here on News 101. TransLink plans to expand its fleet. Chairman Dale Parker announced Friday that the Transportation Authority plans to spend $150 million on new buses and SkyTrain cars. $47 million of this funding is coming from the provincial government. The money will buy 20 new electric trolleys, 11 articulated diesel buses, 72 standard diesel electric hybrid buses, and 14 additional SkyTrain cars. The new buses will come into service between December of 2009 and May of 2010. Once operational, TransLink expects these new buses will increase Vancouver's system capacity by about 11,000 transit riders per day.
Premier Gordon Campbell announced new funding from the provincial government in Vanoc for Covenant House today. The youth shelter currently has beds for 22 youth who have left situations of abuse or neglect. The $5 million in new funding will allow the shelter to increase the number of beds and help with ongoing costs. Executive Director of Covenant House, Krista Thompson, welcomes the money, saying the additional funding will mean that they can stop turning away so many street youth because they don't have enough beds.
And don't call it a casino. Newton is going to be home to a community gaming center. The BC Lottery Corporation has proposed building a community gaming center with 150 slot machines in Newton, known as Bingo Country, on the King George Highway in Surrey. Anti-gambling groups say that this is a part of a new effort to build mini casinos around the province and that the federal government is addicted to the gambling revenues. Entertainment groups in Newton say that despite the new slot machines, bingo will still be the marquee attraction in Newton.
People in BC may want to be green, but they don't rate their own efforts too highly. According to a new Ipsos Reid poll, only 6% of British Columbians would give themselves an A for environmental effort. 48% of us would give ourselves a B, and 37% would give ourselves a C. Ipsos Reid representative Catherine Dawson says that most people are pretty good at recycling, waste management, and composting, but that when it comes to the harder decisions, like what car to buy, where to eat, or how to commute to work, most people admit that they have not made a significant change. Dawson says that taking transit to work instead of driving just one day a week can make a huge difference for the environment. Only 21% of British Columbians are going green for their vehicle choices, with just a few people switching to a hybrid vehicle in order to save on gas. This comes despite the fact that a quarter of all hybrid sales in Canada are in British Columbia. BC Hydro provides other easy ways to go green around the house, including switching to incandescent light bulbs, unplugging things like your cell phone once they're charged up, and by washing your clothes in cold water.
And it's now time for a quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
Plea Community Services Society of BC is calling out for volunteers for the KidStart Mentoring Program. The KidStart Mentoring Program matches kids 6 years old and older with an adult mentor. This program is similar to the Big Brothers, except geared towards kids at risk, vulnerable to addiction, crime, abuse, and family crisis. At this moment, there are 243 children and youth waiting for a KidStart volunteer. To volunteer, or for more information regarding the KidStart Mentoring Program or PLEA Community Services, please visit our websites, www.plea.ca and www.kidstart.ca.
The April edition of Discorder magazine is on the streets now. Features include Ryan McMahon, The Great Outdoors, winners of last year's Shindig competition, and the cover story is an interview with Hot Chip. As always, Discorder features the newest recorded and live music reviews, CITR program guide, and the top 50 charts for the month. The April edition of Discorder can be found everywhere that's remotely cool and is brought to you by the staff and volunteers of Discorder and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Want to see your film up on the big screen?
The Vancouver Student Film Festival is back to showcase the best of BC's post-secondary student and alumni film and video makers on May 24th.
The film festival is looking for entries of all genres, from student or graduate filmmakers within the last 3 years. Films received by March 1st are only $10 and $20 until April 19th.
Only 2 weeks left before the early entry deadline. For entry rules and to submit online, please visit www.vsff.com.
Let the cartoons begin!
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:07. A human rights complaint is being filed against the Canadian government for its inability to provide adequate housing to lower-income citizens. A group of civil society organizations, including the Impact on Communities Coalition, the Carnegie Community Action Project, and the Pivot Legal Society, will be appealing to the United Nations to intervene on the situation. A report initiated by UBC students Mike Power and Gail Stewart of Professor Byers Global Politics and International Law class first became interested in the situation. The two students took part in a walking tour of the downtown East Side in September of 2007, which spurred their interest in filing a complaint. The complaint will be filed through the Section 1503 procedure with the UN Human Rights Council, which is the oldest human rights complaint mechanism in the United Nations system. With more on the complaint, here is Carrie Baptist.
The complaint makes several arguments about Canada's lack of action, from failing to ensure minimum health and safety standards, to failing to require market housing developments, which include a portion with non-market housing. Jane Swanson of the Carnegie Community Action Project says the Downtown Eastside hotels are the last resort homes for low-income people, but that the study being released shows that almost half of these hotels are closed, with rental rates increasing, meaning that more and more low-income residents will be pushed out onto the streets. Additionally, David Eby of the Pivot Legal Society says he is disappointed that international organizations have to be brought into such simple matters as getting police intervention on illegal evictions, but that they are willing to take such actions if this is what it takes. He adds that issues related to the complaint were raised early on in the Olympic bid in 2001, but that ongoing promises of social responsibility haven't been met.
And truckers are asking the federal government for a break from the new carbon tax. As fuel prices increase, the carbon tax will be an additional 3 cents per liter to the price of gas for trucking companies. President of the BC Trucking Association, Paul Laundrie, says that while people can't change their driving habits in response to higher gas prices, truckers can't. He wants the federal government to reimburse truckers through low-interest loans or tax credits in British Columbia.
In a somewhat related story, the provincial government is on the verge of approving new legislation which would give low-speed electric cars the green light in BC. Currently, these electric cars are in the slow-moving vehicle category with tractors. Under the new legislation, they would be legal to drive on any road with a 40 km/h or less speed designation. It is estimated that choosing an electric car reduces a driver's carbon footprint by 6.5 tons per year. BC would be the first province to adopt legislation allowing low-speed electric cars on the road.
And a new study by the U.S. National Cancer Institute found a link between alcohol consumption and breast cancer. The study found that the more a woman drinks, the more likely she is to develop one common type of breast cancer. According to the research, alcohol increases the amount of estrogen metabolites, which can lead to hormone-sensitive breast cancer. The study followed over 180,000 women in the United States who had been interviewed about their alcohol consumption. Those who consumed one or two drinks a day were 32% more likely to develop breast cancer than their non-drinking cohort, while those that consumed three or more drinks each day increased their risk by 51%. The lead researcher, Jimine Liu, suggested that based on this study, women should evaluate their consumption of alcohol. And in international news, after the halt of a free trade deal in Colombia, President Alvaro Uribe discusses his relief over the situation and that the great impact such a deal could have on Colombian farmers. With that story, here is FSRN.
Democrats in Washington recently stalled a free trade agreement with Colombia, asking the White House to provide more protection to U.S. workers who would lose their jobs if the deal is signed. The Colombian government was disappointed by the decision, saying it would push back the country's development. But Colombian President Álvaro Uribe's opposition is relieved. They say that the FTA would put millions of small farmers out of business, encouraging them to grow illegal crops like coca leaf to make a living. Manuel Rueda visited the Cauca Valley, one of Colombia's main centers for cocaine production.
The Cauca Valley is one of Colombia's most fertile regions, but most of the land here is taken up by large sugarcane estates, owned by some of the country's richest families. In the surrounding mountains, indigenous people and small farmers tend to their modest plots. They have traditionally made a living from growing coffee, corn, and beans. But many are also growing marijuana and coca, the plant that's used to make cocaine. Herman Valencia used to manage a small marijuana plantation, but he's now a human rights observer for the local indigenous association. He says that farmers are growing coca out of economic necessity, but he's trying to convince them to abandon the coca leaf in order to keep the area clear of armed groups.
The guerrillas promote and commercialize the coca crop. And for every amount that is produced, they charge a tax. That's why here, insurgents will be around the illegal crops. Then the army comes in under the pretext that they are coming to eradicate the illegal crops. Confrontations happen, and civilians pay the price.
But free trade could complicate Valencia's job. Senator Jorge Robledo has written extensively on the impacts of the agreement. He says that cheap imports of wheat, corn, and other grains are putting small farmers out of business, forcing them to grow coca to make ends meet.
The peasant who grows coca is not a drug trafficker, he is simply a farmer. So if the only farming activity that produces benefits is coca, then they will grow coca. They constantly tell the national government to give them another option to grow something else, but there are no options. Well, then they grow coca.
Deme una opción agrícola y yo siembro otra cosa.
Robledo points out that Colombia now imports almost 10 times more food than it did in the early 90s. But the Colombian government does offer some protection to small farmers, especially those who live in conflict zones like the Cauca Valley, where the guerrillas promote the coca crop. Israel Esque lives in La Selva, a former cattle ranch that was occupied by a dozen families in the early 90s.
Before the project began 4 years ago, we were growing corn and beans and some yuca, but we were doing it in a very traditional way. We weren't using technology like we are now, utilizing our resources.
Esque's small farm now mixes cash crops like cocoa with basic foods like corn, poultry, and even fish. The project is called Valle en Paz, or Peace Valley. It provides him with technical support and credit to develop new crops. And it has helped Esque and his neighbors to form a cooperative to which they sell their goods to large supermarkets. The government says that projects like this one will make farmers more competitive, dissuading them from growing the coca leaf. And development agencies like USAID are funding many projects like La Selva all around the country. But the indigenous authorities in the Cauca Valley oppose such schemes. Manuel Rosenthal has worked with the NASA people for over 20 years.
What is really happening is a social program that can be equated to a sort of a charity. You get the poor, you give them a little bit of money, and you help them produce at poverty and subsistence levels so that they can survive for now.
Indigenous leaders say that projects like Valle en Paz will force small farmers to rely on a few buyers from large supermarkets. And they fear that in the long run, multinational corporations will dictate what's grown on their lands and at what price. The solution to the coca problem, they say, is for the government to redistribute the land so that a greater number of small farmers can descend from the mountains to grow fruits and cereals on the valley's fertile floor. But the government is currently backing the production of biofuels, and this industry feeds off the sugarcane estates that currently cover much of the Cauca Valley. I'm Manuel Rueda for FSRN in the Cauca Valley, Colombia.
And in other international news, an Islamic orphanage in the West Bank is facing closure because of its suspected links to Hamas. With that story, here once again is Free Speech Radio News.
The Israeli military issued orders in late February for the closure and confiscation of orphanages, schools, and other facilities in the West Bank city of Hebron, owned by the Islamic Charitable Society, accusing the group of having ties with Hamas. The organization has filed an appeal with Israel's High Court, which demanded the military provide justification by April 6. The military asked for an extension but has yet to provide evidence, and the Israeli court has not yet ruled on the appeal. The closure orders were temporarily frozen for a week, but the Israeli army told the charity last week that they had until Sunday to evacuate. FSRN's Zach Badarf reports that as of today, there has been no move to force the closure.
The military order asserts the 46-year-old charity is connected to the militant organization Hamas and says the buildings must be closed to maintain what it terms security of the area and general order. The Israeli military claims the foundation's resources are devoted to funding Hamas. The Islamic Charitable Society is also accused of training youths in jihad principles and spreading Hamas principles. The charity denies the accusations. At a press conference inside the girls' orphanage, Abd al-Karim Farah, the charity's legal representative, says he has no doubt his organization would win in court if the Israeli legal system was just.
The allegations being leveled against us are totally and completely and absolutely baseless. They are unfounded. We challenge the Israeli government and the Israeli army to produce a single piece of tangible evidence to corroborate their concocted allegations. So far, they haven't done that.
Rashid Rashid, an English teacher at the charity's boys' school, says he has not seen any action by Hamas at the schools in the 12 years he's worked there. But he admits about 20 to 25 of the total 550 employees working for the organization do have ties with the Hamas political party. But he claims the organization has no formal connection with the militant group.
I am not Hamas. I am not Fatah. I smoke. I am not a fanatic. I am a normal person. I have no hatred for Israel or for anybody else. I'm just a teacher. I have never been told to tell my students to hate Israelis or Jews or to kill or to teach them violence. Never, ever.
The society's program serves 7,000 children, including 300 who live in two orphanages. Mohammed Jamal Sahad, deputy head of the Islamic Student Association, is worried about the orphans' psychological well-being. He said the Israeli troops have, in his words, terrorized them with the fear that they'll be out on the streets. Further, he said academic performance of the students has been undermined in the past month. The school is hiring psychological specialists to come help the youngsters.
Right now, there is overwhelming tension and stress among the kids. And frankly, we don't know what to do. The harm to the children cannot be underestimated.
Speaking on behalf of the orphans, Annabelle Shota said she and her classmates are worried they'll be made homeless because of Israel's decision.
Who will put the happiness in our hearts in the days of Eid? Or who will protect us from being lost? Or who will be our shelter in the days of winter? We hope that the echo of our voice will reach your hearts to show you our grief and misery as a result of this oppressive verdict.
According to the military order, anyone entering or using the buildings may be imprisoned for 5 years and have his property confiscated or demolished. International peace activists have joined the orphans at the orphanage in defiance of the order by spending their days and nights in the schools to document and report the actions of the Israeli military in the event the order is carried out. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Zach Badarwolf reporting from Hebron in the West Bank.
And thanks, as always, to Free Speech Radio News for their quality programming. It's time for another break, but there's still much more to come on News 101. When we come back, Megan Turcotto will tell us what's happening in the local arts scene. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
The UBC Ski and Snowboard Club is a nonprofit, democratic, student-run organization dedicated to promoting the sports of skiing and snowboarding and the associated lifestyle.
We endeavor to make skiing and snowboarding accessible and fun by actively seeking out the best deals and discounts for our members, as well as organizing trips to local ski areas and setting up numerous social events.
Come on one of our legendary trips and explore the glory of riding in British Columbia. Or join us at the bar to discover the true meaning of debauchery. Ask your roommate, ask your parents, ask the RCMP. Who has the most fun at UBC? You'll get the same answer. The Ski and Snowboard Club.
Duh.
Joining the Ski and Board Club is easy. Come by our office, sub 115, anytime with some money to become a member. Your membership gives you access to all the deals offered by our sponsors, cheap beverages at our parties, an invitation to all club events, and of course, only members can come on the trips.
Yeah.
You run it up the brush.
On April 17th, 18th, and 19th, Vivo Media Art Center and CITR 101.9 FM present Signal and Noise. Currently in its ninth year, Signal and Noise is a laser blast of sonic dissidence, video trickery, primed to drag your electronic brain kicking and screaming into a new realm of media art. Based on the theme of media intercourse, Signal and Noise features artists from all over the globe. Each evening presents three elements: a diffusion segment where the audience can sit or lie down within a circle of eight speakers and listen to compelling compositions. Next, festival participants can mingle amongst a series of installations like Endless Kiss or Sex Noise and various slab works presented by Vivo staff members, or a blanket tent presented by the Seam Rippers. Capping off the festival are a series of live performances by the likes of Robot Cowboy, Ghost Taco, Triptych, Touching Velvet, to name a few. Signal and Noise at the Video in 1965 Main Street, April 17th, 18th, and 19th, brought to you by the Vivo Media Arts Center and CITR 101.9 FM.
Welcome back to News 101 on CITR. I'm Rita Farkas, coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. Right now, it's 5:24 and time for the Arts Report with our producer, Megan Turcato.
Now it's time for your 5-minute arts beat. Ruby Slippers Theater is presenting The View from Above, the English language world premiere of James Long's play. That's on at Performance Works until April 27th. At Gateway Theater is a production of I Love You, You're Perfect, Now Change, a power play of over 30 characters in an old-hold bard musical following the ups and downs of relationship. For more information, go to www.gatewaytheater.com. Arts Club Theater is currently presenting Poster Boys, Mitchell Rimmey's exploration of love, marriage, and the fear of flying in the harsh glare of the media spotlight. That's on till April 27th at their Granville Island stage. For more information, go to www.artsclub.com. The Woodman's playing at Pacific Theatre. It's the world premiere of Stephen Fletcher's play, which looks into the hearts and minds of a pedophile. That's on till April 26th. West Side Story is playing at the Massey Theatre. It's a modern retelling of Romeo and Juliet, directed by Lloyd Nicholson and accompanied by the Royal Sydney Musical Theatre Orchestra. That's on till April 26th. And finally, the Playhouse Theatre Company is presenting True West. Dean Paul Gibson directs Sam Shepard's story of the showdown between two brothers, one a thief and the other a straight arrow, as their lives take a surprising convergence at their mother's Los Angeles home. That's on till April 19th. And in dance this week, we have Elastic Perspectives, the Canadian ensemble Rubber Dance Group, performs a hybrid of hip-hop and classical dance styles at the Vancouver East Cultural Centre on until April 19th. Starting Thursday, April 17th, is Peter Pan. Under the direction of artistic director John Allen, Ballet British Columbia presents the ballet version of J.M. Barrie's classic tale of a boy who refuses to grow up. That's on at the Queen Elizabeth Theatre, April 17th to 19th. This Saturday, April 19th, is Guillermo Savat and Sylvia Guyant, Argentino Tango Show and Gala at Capri Hall. For more information, look at www.bctango.com. Next Sunday, April 20th, the Atlantic Ballet Theatre of Canada presents The Phantom of the Opera, its take on Andrew Lloyd Webber's iconic work. Finally, in music, the National Children's Choir of Great Britain is performing at Christ Church Cathedral this Tuesday, April 15th. The choir wraps up their tour with a final show in Vancouver, singing alongside the Vancouver Children's Choir. Next Wednesday, April 16th, Seattle pianist Craig Shepard presents Bach Well-Tempered Cavalier. The professor of piano at the University of Washington School of Music performs one of Bach's work in its entirety. That's at the UBC School of Music on April 16th. And finally, this Sunday, April 20th, Peter Zenneker and the Castelnuovo Tedesco Guitar Quintet perform works by Mozart and Bourdin at the My Seymour United Church. And this has been your 5-Minute Arts Update.
And thank you, Megan. Now with a look back this past weekend in UBC Athletics, here's Wilson Wong with Thunderbird Ion Sports.
Thunderbird Eye on this sunny Monday. We'll start with the baseball team. They won 3 of 4 conference games over the weekend against Corbin College to remain in first place in their region. The T-Birds opened with 2 wins on Friday. UBC gave up 3 runs to open the series, but scored 5 straight to win in 7 innings. In the second game on Friday, Fletcher Vinn drove in the winning run in the 10th inning to give UBC a 7-6 win. The Thunderbirds then struggled in a 14-11 loss Saturday morning, committing 3 errors and allowing 7 runs in the top of the 6th inning. UBC then rebounded with a 4-3 victory to end the series, with the winning runs coming in the 8th inning. They got a lot of help from Corbin, who committed 4 errors and left 12 runners on base. Their conference record is 13-4, 2 games ahead of the College of Idaho. In men's rugby, UBC beat Richmond 25-0 on Saturday. They finished the regular season tied for 3rd in the BC Rugby First Division. The playoffs start this weekend. The track and field team was in Bellingham, Washington for the Western Washington meet on Friday. The men's squad finished 3rd, the women 4th. Some of the highlights for the men include Mike Giuffre's win in the 100-meter dash and Jordan Maynard's win in the steeplechase. The 4x400 relay team also won their event. For the women, the big highlight was the UBC sweep in the 10,000-meter run. Fawn Whitting, Natalie Ball, and Nicole Aykroyd finished 1, 2, 3, respectively. The other winners include Claudia Richard in the 400-meter dash, Adele Johns in the 100-meter hurdles, and Ella Johnstone in the shot put. This week, the team is in California preparing for the Mount SAC relays, which begin on Wednesday. That's your Thunderbird Eye for this Monday. I'm Wilson Wong for CITR Sports.
And thanks, Wilson, for that. We're going to go to a quick PSA break, but when we come back, we're going to give you a 5-day weekend weather, or excuse me, a 5-day weather forecast.
Hi, I'm Kirsty.
And I'm Sheila.
And we're both single moms. We started SPOC UBC, Single Parenting on Campus, an AMS club, with the hope of drawing attention to the additional challenges single parenting students face on our campus. We want to create a space for single parenting students to find resources and support.
Our first meeting will be held on Tuesday, November 6th from 11 to 12:30 at the Women and Gender Studies WAGS building right next to Brock Hall. We welcome all single parenting students and, of course, allies. And please remember that your children are always welcome.
Please help us spread the word by informing any single parenting students that you know about our group. We're also open to receiving anecdotes or stories from single parent students regarding their time spent at UBC.
Feel free to drop by our meeting on November 6th or send us an email at spoc.ubc@gmail.com. We really look forward to hearing or seeing you.
Welcome back to News 101. It's 5:29 p.m. We're going to wrap up this evening's show with meteorologist Selena Ferris and your 5-day weather forecast.
We have a variable week coming up, which means that we are going to see all the usuals for this time of year: sun, clouds, and showers. Tomorrow will be cloudy with showers in the afternoon and a high of 10 degrees. Conditions should clear a little by Wednesday for a mix of sun and cloud, a high of 10 degrees and a low down to 6. Thursday and Friday will be cloudy with sunny periods and a chance for showers. That's your 5-day weather brought to you by the Storm Club at UBC. For more information, you can email us at stormubc@gmail.com.
And thanks to Selena for that quick little tidbit of this week's weather. That's our program for April 14th, 2008. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. And if you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email news@citr.ca. Megan Turcato produced this radio program. For more news, join us Friday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. For the entire news team here at CITR, this is Rita Farkas thanking you for listening. Stay tuned for Career Fast Tracks coming up next on 101.9 FM CITR.